This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello and welcome to Elgium Talks. I'm Mark Chappell, and this is our podcast on all things investments from legal and general investment management. Following our last episode on that famous British obsession, housing, we wanted to dig deeper on the UK housing market and how the structural move back towards renting is creating opportunities for investors. I'm delighted to welcome back one of our favourite and one of our first ever guests on the podcast, Eleanor Jukes, Senior Strategist in the Real Assets team, to dive into the world of UK renting. Ellie, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. It's been so long since I've been here, or at least it feels like that, and I'm really pleased to be back.
Ellie, what's going on with renting? You touched on it slightly in your wonderful episode with Hettle on how the UK housing market was changing. But here we're going to focus on renting. What's going on here?
So back in November 2018, I think when I sat down with Hettle, we talked about the history of housing. So the UK has always been a nation of renters. Back in the 1900s, about 90% of the UK rented their homes. That changed. We saw the advent of the owner-occupier. There were various government initiatives where we decided that we would prefer to own our own home. Mm-hmm. But actually, over the past 10 years or so, we've now seen a reversal of that trend and an increase in the proportion of people renting their homes. And as at the end of last year, that number hit 20%. So that's a big chunk of the UK population. But as there's ever with statistics, there's much more interesting detail behind that headline number. And we've seen a real structural change in what people want from their home. And I use home specifically because they don't just want a house. They want somewhere where they can personalise and make it their own, that's part of a bigger community. And alongside that, we've seen a change in the actual stock of homes. So this has seen the rise of what we call the build-to-rent sector. Mm-hmm. Again, very clear in our messaging, it's not the private rental sector. There's a very clear difference between those two different types of home. So by build-to-rent, we mean purpose-built. It's designed with the requirements and demands of the renter in mind. So particularly around storage, around the layout of the bedrooms within the space. So we did some interesting work looking at what's the optimal layout of bedrooms. Should it be a barbell so the rooms face each other,
or should face each other around like a lounge area? So out of the lounge you go one way for one
left
bedroom.
left or right you choose, or whether the bedrooms should be adjacent to each other,
so along one wall as it were.
Potentially be next door to each other. We assumed, being British, that people would prefer to have some distance between their bedrooms. We were wrong. Renters actually prefer to have bedrooms that are adjacent to each other. They didn't like the barbell effect. It was too institutional, by which I mean prison-esque.
Oh no, so everyone back to their cells. Lights out.
Yes, and pull down the shutters. So some really interesting, actually, kind of psychosocial factors behind what people want from their rental home. Mm. And alongside that, they want an element of personalisation. They want to put their pictures on the wall. They want to be able to build in soft furnishings if they like.
And even that is quite radical in the way that I've experienced the private rental market. It's very much been like small landlords who've just bought this one or two other investment properties, as it were, and already previously standing, and they're very much like, can't put anything up on the wall, do not paint anything, do not change anything without perhaps, you know, weeks of negotiation with being like, maybe we should replace the fridge from the 1970s.
And because it's leaking toxic gas.
Yes, exactly.
And you just really nicely alluded to the two differences between the sectors. So build to rent is for renters. Mm. The private rental sector is very often converted buy to let properties or converted owner occupied stock. Around 70% of the rental market in the UK is actually small landlords with less than 10% dwellings. We would argue they're not professionally managed. Mm. There's issues around the standard and consistency of how letting fees were applied, and the length of tenure. We think there's been a big change to professionalise the rental market. Institutional investors have woken up to this. They can see the opportunity, and as I'll talk about a little bit later, how the investment characteristics of this asset class can actually align both what renters want and what investors and other stakeholders are looking for. And it's been a really positive change in the market.
I say 70% of the private rental market are all in these kind of very small private landlord hands. Have we seen larger players come into this? I mean, the 30% that aren't, can we understand that kind of section in the market a little bit better here?
Sure. I mean, if you, as with everything in financial services, there's an index. if you dig into the MSCI IPD residential index, so residential properties that are owned by UK institutional investors, historically there's always been ownership of residential property in the UK by institutions, but it's quite often been people like Grosvenor and the sort of very historic estates, rather than it being the purpose-built rental products that we talk about with build-to-rents. Around 2012, if you remember back to 2012, there was the Olympics. That's a big seminal moment.
Didn't we do well? London 2012, TGB.
Yes. And if you remember next to the stadium, there was a lot of blocks of flats that went up. They were what we think the first build-to-rent products in the UK. Mm-hmm. So there was the whole legacy focus of the Olympics. The intention was always that those homes would be rented out after the Olympics. And they were the first build-to-rent products in the UK. Since around 2015, was really where we see to be the sort of advent of the build-to-rent sector proper. And you've got a number of different institutional players in the market, including Legal & General with its build-to-rent funds. It's still a very new emerging sector. There's very little history of trading data and sort of stock out there, but it is picking up speed. If we think about the number of homes that are built at the moment in build-to-rents, it's currently about 30,000 units that are operational. So by that mean people living in them. But then there's a huge pipeline of about 125,000 units that are in planning construction. So those are pretty big numbers.
Those are big numbers. Over what time frame can we understand that?
So we would expect those to be built out over the next 2 to 3 years.
That's much faster than I was expecting. I mean, that's a huge number considering the targets are around that number for the whole of the UK.
Well, we need to kind of compare apples with apples. So Homes England have been very public in the quantifiable need for homes in the UK. They think that there is an annual housing requirement for 300,000 homes. If you compare that, that's per annum, but there needs to be a mix of tenures within that. If we add up that 30,000 operational units and the pipeline, it still equates to less than 3% of all housing stock in the UK. So actually, it's a pretty small number. There is some real headroom there to improve the housing stock in the UK.
So it started only a couple of years ago and yet has, you know, and not yet more than 3%, but the rate of growth, it seems, is going to make up a much larger proportion of the UK housing stock.
Yes. So over the past 12 months, the number of BTR homes coming out of the ground has risen by 40%. So 40. And so there's definite momentum behind there, but that's not to say we're worried about a saturated market. The existing stock that's out there is so fragmented and, as I've alluded to, not purpose-built for rental. We really think there's a big opportunity there, both the residents and investors in the market.
And so can we understand that is the rise in build-to-rent fixing a hole in a market that's not yet been addressed or hasn't been addressed properly by the private rental sector? Or is this a new demand that's kind of sprung up, even though there's this structural move back to renting, the move for build-to-rent, choosing build-to-rent models has sprung up out of nowhere, or is it coming from other places?
That's a really interesting question, and I think two different ways of trying to address it. There is the movement towards a more consumer-aware society. We are seeing more and more the advent of what we call lifestyle renters, so people renting because they want to, not because they have to.
And if I remember rightly, you absolutely said this the last podcast as well. You are going to be a lifelong renter.
Because I am one of the lifestyle renters, and happily and unapologetically so. But if we look to the States, for example, over in the US, the multifamily rental model has been around for decades, owned by the institutions, and has done incredibly well. They know what they're doing. They do a good job. Equally, in places like Australia and New Zealand and in Europe as well, renting is not unusual in those markets, and neither is the presence of institutions. So we know it works as an investable asset class. So it's partly a timing movement where people are becoming less obsessed with owning their home, and partly people looking across to the different comparable Western markets in the world and thinking, well, it's worked there, so.
Precisely. And then that comes back to your, I guess, the quality of that rental product is if I'm going to be a lifestyle renter, or if I'm going to, you know, not be so, not use renting as a stepping stone in order to buy my house in the near term, you want the quality of that rental accommodation not to be, I mean, if I think back to like grotty student accommodation, like where the landlord can essentially take advantage of you in every which way because you're very green. You are now, you know, well established. You're, you know, in late 20s, early 30s, late 30s, whatever it is. You want to be able to customize your home to make it exactly as you said, a home.
Absolutely. And there's some interesting work that's been done by the government departments. I've written this down because I always get the acronym wrong.
Yes.
MHCLG, which used to be a Department of Communities and Local Government, but has since been rebranded to include housing. Actually, the average tenure in the UK, so length of tenure, is 4 years.
Okay.
Which is longer than I thought.
No,
I was surprised.
Absolutely. Considering leases are so much shorter than that, that they've got to be renewed, whether it's 6 months or 1 year. I mean, a 2 year lease is already, in my mind, quite a long term one.
Absolutely. But as you're right, so the minimum lease for most homes is only 6 months. Mm. So there's a real mismatch between what residents want and what landlords, whether they're institutional or private, have been offering. Mm-hmm. One of the really encouraging underpins of this sector is how much cross-government support there has been for BTR or purpose-built mm-hmm. rental accommodation. It's one of the areas that I think receives rare cross-Whitehall support. If we weren't talking about Brexit, I think the government would be talking about housing even more.
Even more.
But alongside that, there has been policy support. So if we think back to 2017, there was a housing white paper, placed a lot of emphasis on build-to-rent through planning policy and mm-hmm. encouraged family-friendly leases. Since then, there's been the release of the Letwin Review in 2018. Actually, a really genuinely interesting piece of policy. So if you're going to read one thing, read that. But for those who don't have the time or inclination to read that, the key message there was that provision of housing stock should be across a range of tenures. Mm. Owner occupation is still an important part of the market, but there should be proper rental stock there also. But the Letwin Review also made an interesting point that so much of the housing provision is by the traditional house builders. Mm-hmm. They will only build what the market will absorb. They are at the moment building this very one-dimensional, monopolistic housing product for sale because the market isn't absorbing that for various reasons. Build-out rates are really slowing down. Mm-hmm. If we do nuanced, targeted to the local area style product, whether that's ownership or rental, hopefully that should speed up build-out rates and we should move closer towards that 300,000 homes target that we spoke about earlier.
I guess it's about being really kind of cognizant of the community that you want to try and build around your build. To coin a horrible phrase, that, you know, you can't just keep building 2 to 3 bedroom houses with a garden and a small front garden and a driveway in every single type of area. Not every area is suburban and can accommodate that. And as you were saying, not everyone wants to rent that sort of thing. Some people would want to rent or live in the city centre, and some people want to live slightly further out.
Agreed. But one of the C word, the community word, is, I think, key in what you've just said. And talking to the tenants, the residents that we have in our own building, they really are appreciative of our efforts to instill and build community within our developments. Mm-hmm. And it's being mindful and not being too onerous in what we do, but giving them the toolkit to make their own connections. So we have notice boards and different other social media applications where they can reach out to people, organise evenings. Mm. And that it goes back to that building a home point. That's the resident view. Equally, if you're an investor or a stakeholder looking at build to rents, that it has a positive impact on the community, whether that's in the scheme itself or opening up facilities to the wider public. That's a really important checkbox for them.
Absolutely. So to build this community for renters who really want to be part of these schemes, these build-to-rent schemes, we need to kind of re-establish what we mean in the UK, as you were exactly saying, compared to other countries and the way they approach renting, of what is it that a tenant can do? What is it to mean? What does it mean to be a tenant in a rental or property?
By definition, if you are a tenant, you are signing a contract with another party to stay in that home. One of the encouraging movements and progressions that we've seen in this sector came out really from that 2017 housing white paper, and it was encouraging resident-friendly policies within the sector. So part of this was longer-term tenancies, so moving away from that six-month minimum. Yep. The government is pushing towards longer-term tenancies, so a minimum of 3 years now with a break at 6 months. Mm-hmm. So and then that would roll forward. So just giving you the headroom there if you do want to create your home and sort of bed down roots over a longer period than 6 months. So it's becoming a much more resident-friendly sector to be in, but thinking about what the investor and owner point of view is we would like our residents to stay with us for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. It means that we don't have empty units where people aren't paying rents. This provides us with really long-term stable income streams. Most of the people, institutions in the markets have been really innovative in how they structure their leases, and it's very transparent. So it will often, rental increases will often be linked to an inflation index. Mm-hmm. We are open and transparent about that, so people know what they will be paying from year on year. So it's good for our residents, it's good for us because we get those long-term stable income streams.
I mean, I think that's fantastic because, again, to take it back to the private rental market, I mean, I remember just coming up to my end of time for lease renewal with my private landlord, and you'd just be kind of like, what are they going to ask for? Who knows? It could be an increase of nothing, it could be a minor increase, or it could be a massive increase. And it's kind of not having that visibility creates so much more stress for a tenant, because maybe you would have to leave at a very short notice in that case. And I think that's having that transparency is so important for tenants' engagement.
Absolutely. And that is one of the key defining features of build to rent as opposed to the wider private rental sector, is the removal of that opacity around leases and tenures and the contract side of things. Because, as I said, it's good for our residents, it's good for us as institutional owners. We have happy residents, they will stay, we have long term cash flows.
And absolutely, if you've got happy residents, you've got long term cash flows, that must make your investment case all the more stronger, with these resilient revenues, as it were, that, you know, if a tenant is going to stay there for the long term, that is cash flow you can rely on in a much more tangible way for your future investment.
Absolutely. And as the strategist at Real Assets, I really like talking about residential for all the reasons that you've just described. As you mentioned, there's those really long-term inflation-linked income streams. Mm-hmm. That gives us a very clear liability matching angle. As I mentioned earlier, occupancy rates within schemes are often very high, very close to 100%. But there's also some interesting angles if you think about diversification, of course. That's investment rationale 101. And one of my favourite jokes is, of course, less is more in diversification. And if you compare the performance of residential property compared to other asset classes, whether that's government bonds, whether it's equities, whether it's corporate debts, it's not very well correlated. So they behave in different ways over the cycle. And even if you compare the performance of residential property, rental property, to UK GDP, so again, if you correlate it over a long time period, it's not that correlated. They don't move in a similar way. So for us as investors, that means that we've got this kind of very clear, robust diversification.
It sounds like an asset class that really stands out, if I've understood that correctly, that it just stands apart.
It does something different.
To take it back to the fact that, you know, that built to rent seems to make up such a tiny proportion, just under 3%. It seems like a very young sector. What are the risks that lie ahead for the growth in BTR? This great growth that you laid out earlier.
Yeah, so if you look at how old the BTR sector is at the moment, well, it really only came into being in any kind of quantifiable sense in 2015. Since then, the pipeline has grown. Our learnings have been incredibly expansive in terms of its public awareness. It's growing. But one of the really interesting facets about this sector has been the importance of innovation and also how self-regulating owners have been. So the sort of MO of build-to-rent owners and developers has been to challenge the poor standards of quality, the poor standards of build, and the lack of professional management that we've found in the wider PRS sector. We have been, residential is a regulated sector. There is a risk that it becomes more regulated, more regulated at a macro level and a policy level. We are cautious that this would stymie the innovation that we've seen within the sector. So most of the best in class built and rents institutional owners have already implemented the longer term tenancies. They haven't charged fees. They've had the professional management. They've had the transparency around the rental contracts. What we do advocate is engagement and dialogue, whether that's with residents, with the local authority, with the planners, and to ensure that everyone's best interests are maintained.
And that comes back to your transparency point of being very clear, like, this is what we want to achieve and what our tenants want, what our residents want to achieve, and also what the local government wants to achieve as well.
Absolutely. There is scope here to check those three boxes, residents, the local authorities and the investors.
But as long as we always keep that resident at heart, I think is both whether it's the policymakers or institutional investors like ourselves, keeping the resident at heart can only, you know, ensure best outcomes.
Absolutely. And I mean, that really is the key take home from this session today, is that build to rent is a real opportunity to address the housing supply issues that we have in the UK, to provide a real resident focused product, one that is driven by innovation and self-regulation, but also importantly has a really strong investment underpin and a strong rationale that can provide those really long term stable income streams that our stakeholders and our pension funds and other institutions are looking for.
Fantastic. And so to wrap up, if I understood this correctly, that build to rent is really providing, is filling that gap in the UK housing supply to really give tenants and residents exactly the kind of properties that they're really seeking, and at the same time deliver these kind of long-term, resilient, stable, inflation-linked incomes that institutional investors and like ourselves and institutional clients really want to achieve.
Absolutely. It's just one part of the puzzle in providing housing to the UK. It's a really innovative, interesting part of the market. There are some great stories. As I said, housing is part of the British obsession. Now we have no royal weddings to talk about. Let's talk about housing instead.
Let's talk about housing. Well, I'm sure we will have you back in the very near future to talk even more. Thank you so much to our production team and our wonderful producer, Holly McNulty. And thanks to you for listening. See you next week for more LGIM Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.